Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Big shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Hoorah. No, I did it wrong again. It's hoorah.
Hoorah.
Right? Isn't it hoorah?
Either one works, man.
No, but I want to know the right one. What's the proper military? It's hoorah.
Guys,
hoorah. Dang it. Hoorah.
Yeah, we got there. We also have company. You're Noel Brown. I'm Ben Bolin. We had an astonishing bit of luck recently, folks. A funny thing happened on the way to the studio. As they say, it all began when we started talking about obituaries, right? They're a genre of literature all their own. Sadness, but surprisingly, there's often a touch of whimsy and a little bit of spite at times. But
pending,
More than anything, right? I think we can all agree there's a profound humanness to them, and they provide a unique insight into history. This led us to, Noel, the absolute best exploration of obituaries in all of podcastery, all of broadcasting, I would say.
Podcastendom.
Yeah. It's American English, right? We're freestyling. We cannot wait to explore Mobituaries with Mo Rocca, created and hosted by none other than a personal hero of ours. Max, can I get some perfect. The journalist, the humorist, the author, and all-around top-notch man of letters, Mr. Mo Rocca. Get this, Noel. The man himself is here with
us here
today. Yeah, he's right here. Mo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm sitting on my throne in podcastendom. I just made it up myself, the throne. It's not even actually standing. But thank you for that introduction.
I've always been a fan of the word Christendom, you know, like in King Arthur tales, and I've never fully understood what it, I get the gist. It just has a weight to it, but I think applying that to the world of podcasting is appropriate. Mo, do you know what Christendom means in that parlance?
You know, but I don't know exactly, but I do know that I hear like the strains of Camelot in the background. I just want Richard Burton to come in here and start narrating this podcast, this episode.
Something to do with Christianity?
No, poppycock. Absolutely.
Okay, fair enough.
We are, as you can tell, Mo, we, like you, are huge fans of history. You've always had this abiding interest in history through a very, I would say, human perspective. Like, what is the soul of the story? And that really shows, that really comes out and presents in Mobituaries. I think Noel and me and our fellow listeners playing along at home would love to hear a bit of an origin story. How did Mobituaries come to be?
Well, I did begin to love obituaries in part I think it was, first of all, as I myself was getting older, I inherited it from my father. My father loved obituaries, and he wasn't a gloomy guy at all. Growing up in the Washington, D.C. area, there were two daily papers when I was a kid, and my father would read them both, the Washington Star and the Washington Post, and he'd say, oh boy, the obituaries is my favorite section of the paper. And I think he liked it because it had, you know, if it's done right, there's like a real sense of romance and of sweep, and it's sort of like the highs, the lows, the triumphs, the tragedies. And when you read them, if they're done right, it does sort of feel like a trailer for an Oscar-winning biopic, sort of. And I think that's probably where I kind of got the like for them. And then as I got older, I continued reading them, and it seemed like a great way to do a profile of a person, to tell a person's story. You know, and as I started meeting obituary writers, I found out that it's a kind of a more and more coveted beat. You know, I mean, print journalism, obviously, things are really, really rough and not getting any better, unfortunately. But I think it used to be, I guess, pun intended, sort of a graveyard for writers where they'd end up at the end of their careers. But now I think, you know, the obit writers at the Washington Post, they've got a really vibrant department there. And you know, the head over there said, look, it's like you get to write for sports, you get to write for business, you get to write for entertainment, because it depends who dies. And also just it's handy having a first name like Mo, because you can turn it into a bunch of different things. And, you know, if my name were Cecil or something, I wouldn't have a podcast. So
Cecil Obituary.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work.
And in the modern time, too, it's interesting to think about all of the ongoing iterations that an obituary goes through before the person even dies. And there have been cases where it accidentally got leaked or something.
Yeah.
Or it was mispublished. And, you know, what must that be like to be that person that's constantly updating the obituary of a very prolific artist or musician or, you know, personality? And then finally, when it's time to pull the trigger, you've kind of been working on it ongoingly for some time, right?
I know. You know, it's there was this great documentary. I wish I could remember the name of it, about the New York Times obituary department a few years ago. It'll come to me. But there is the guy who would go down basically into the dungeon and pull up these obituaries when they needed updates. Some of them were just print. They hadn't even been digitized. And I think there's a record for how long the gap was between something being written and something being published. And it was an aviatrix, of course. Like, remember aviatrixes? And it was some daredevil young woman who was a pilot, I think, in her teens, and then lived until her 90s. So it had been like over 80 years. What I found fascinating with the obituary writers I met, I'll never get over this, is one of the writers at the Times told me that there are people who cold call the Times to talk about their own obituary. I mean, if that isn't confidence, crazy chutzpah, like, hi, I'm calling to talk about, you know, I just thought I had some free time and I'm calling to talk about the obituary you are already writing about me.
Is that confidence or conceitedness? Is it a combination of the two?
Yeah, you're right. It's worse than that. And I would be so tempted to just say, you know, we're still on the fence. We're just not sure.
This is our thing.
Yeah,
live your life.
If you accomplish a little bit more in these last years, then I think it'll push you over the top into contention. Yeah.
As far as getting covered,
exactly,
right? It's almost like getting your wedding covered by the New York Times.
Right.
A big get for so many people.
Yeah, it's the last who's who. Yeah.
Right.
There's also it's funny to me that you talk about that record for our aviator, right? Because
I just clocked what you meant by that word, by the way. I get it now.
He's a man of letters, I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's good.
I would say my money would have originally been on Henry Kissinger, because I feel like people kept writing that obituary.
Yeah.
And
what a complex legacy. I mean, awful guy. I think we would maybe agree, maybe not, but very complex. And how do you sum that life up?
Well, I know it's also interesting. It would be interesting to see all the different versions, to see where things fall. Like, I, you know, with Jimmy Carter, where his post-presidency falls versus his presidency itself. I mean, that's definitely changed over the years. I think the Bill Clinton impeachment, I'd be really curious where that falls at this point. It's probably moved up, down, or, I mean, it'll probably be in that first line, you know, William Jefferson Clinton, comma, the 42nd president who also, comma, died today. But that clause, that's where everything's really packed in there. But how it changes, yeah. Another one that's wild is when somebody has lived so long that people have forgotten who they are, but they were still important. So Madam Chiang Kai-shek, the wife of the Chinese nationalist leader, I think she lived until she was about 106. And it had been so long since she was, you know, at the center of the world and news that I was probably one of four people who read the whole obit. And it was incredibly long, this obit, because it clearly had been written at a time when her death would have been really big news. But she just lived so long.
And this is something that I think we all really enjoy with mobituaries, because again, I keep coming back to the way that you explore history in such a human, soulful perspective. I also have to give a shout out to my grandmother's ravioli.
Thank you very much.
Not specifically yours, but the program.
Yeah, not my notes. Grandmother. Yes. It was just one of my mom's favorite shows.
Kidding.
With this. No, no.
I'm so happy to hear that. I loved, you know, both the mobituaries and my grandmother's ravioli were projects that I felt very, very personally about. I loved doing it so much. For those who don't know, I went around the country learning to cook from grandmothers and grandfathers in their kitchens, but it was really about learning who they were and their life story and what mattered to them and just having fun with them also. I loved it so much. So thank you, Ben.
Oh, well, there's so much history and love and, you know, caring built into recipes, the way they're kept, you know, the handwritten notes and the iterations, and maybe some of them are just committed to memory and passed down through family members, all of that. I just think in and of, it's another example, much like obituaries, where it's sort of a back door into history in a very interesting way.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Have you encountered things in your work, because we're four seasons in obituaries, have you encountered stories that really surprised you, like in an unexpected way? Because each one feels so unique, you know. I feel almost like I'm asking you if you have a favorite child, but I'm not. I promise. Like the ones that like hit you. Similar to Madam Chiang Kai-shek's thing, where you thought, oh, I thought this would be pretty simple, but holy smokes, the plot twist here.
Yeah, I think there definitely have been those. I mean, I think Chang and Aang, the original so-called Siamese twins, where mm-hmm. that term came from, who were from Siam, what is now Thailand, and moved to the United States as teenagers and became some of the first celebrities in America, when the only thing that Americans had as pastimes in the early 19th century was cockfighting, you know, drinking hard cider and card playing. And they became really famous.
In that order.
Right, right. Yeah. All at the same time. And they became really, really famous. And it was a really sort of sweeping story about these guys who were exploited and managed to make lives for themselves. But as they became successful, they ended up owning a plantation and owning slaves. And not just slaves, they bought very young slaves, almost as investment properties. So it was obviously an incredibly ugly side to that story. But I liked doing the story because they kind of packed all of America into their lives. They were an immigrant story. They really had pulled themselves up from their bootstraps. It was a story about celebrity. It was a story about racial prejudice. And then it was against them. And then it was a story about assimilation and then about slavery. So it was like, whoa, it was like taking all of American history and combining it into one story. And, you know, I like doing it because I think we took care with it, but we didn't tiptoe. And I was very happy about that because I don't think people want people tiptoeing around this stuff. And, you know, either way.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month, if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos and the last one, God bless it. I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. It's interesting, too, because a lot of the purpose, and I would love to hear your thoughts on what you think the purpose of an obituary is, but is to kind of set the record straight in a way. It's like sort of to prevent, in some ways, as a functional item, you know, people from spreading rumors about someone's life or what they may or may not have done. And it's sort of meant to be this pithy, definitive, you know, declaration of what a person, who a person was. Do you have any other maybe ways you could elaborate on what the purpose of an obituary is?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know that I've really given it thought in that way. So I'm happy to do that. I mean, I think it's a first draft of history because a lot of them do have errors. So there have been obituaries that I've loved, like Irving Berlin, and I can't cite exactly what was wrong. But when you go back and fact check it now, there were just things that were wrong. And I think the trick, though, is that it kind of has to be faithful to the person. It does have to have head and heart in it. So I think that's why it's important that reporters, when they do these obituaries, or we, when we do these podcast obituaries, try to talk to relatives about how they felt about a person, because feeling sounds really obviously inexact and, you know, undefinable, but it is part of who the person is, what the person meant to other people. So it's not, it can't just be a just the facts, ma'am, kind of writing. It does actually have to, it does have to have an emotional component, I think, actually, to be accurate. So it sort of seems counterintuitive, but I think it does have to do that, as opposed to, say, just reporting on like election returns or something. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely right.
And spoiler for later in today's program, my pal Noel found some obituaries that we would like to share with you.
Oh, great.
Later on for some reactions, because again, it's such a, you know, it is inherently a tragedy whenever someone passes, right?
Yeah.
Even if you don't particularly care for them, but it also has this amazing opportunity. I really do believe it is a genre of literature and should be considered as such. We could talk literature later. We have, as we teased earlier, we have thought arduously, Mo, about things of yesteryear. Our conversation was not just obituaries for people, right? What we wanted to explore with you are somewhat of a swan song for things that have passed. And Noel, Noel and I were very excited about this one. Noel, where do you think we start? Do we embarrass ourselves with our telling Mo our group text about pagers?
You mean in general? Oh, no, yeah, about this.
Oh, in general, yes.
We do occasionally. It's sort of, we're professionals at embarrassing ourselves, but we're okay with it. We lean into it. Yeah, pagers. You know, it's funny because I was thinking about the idea of dead things. And sometimes a thing can be dead in terms of its mainstream use, but it can still be very much alive in more of a niche way. And I think we live in this era where obsolescence is so commonplace, and because of the technological, you know, advancements, exponential, I think there's a pushback against it. People almost resent it and are like, you know, well, so I want to hold on to the things of the past, you know. And Ben found a great word. I don't want to spoil it but that refers to building things into modern designs that represent the ways of the past, or something that might be, what was the word, Ben?
Can you? Oh, Mo already knows it. Skeuomorphs, you know, like when you have the little floppy disk icon on a computer for save, and who uses floppy disk?
Not wow, to date I never us. Thought of that.
Yeah, and you pointed out, but I was like, you said it, the word, and I was like, oh, I immediately understand what that is, but I'm trying to think of examples. And Ben pointed out in cars, there's a lot of like anachronistic things that are built into modern car designs that don't do a thing, but they're like mainly ornamental. But in an older model car, it would have been a very, you know, crucial component. But it's a way of sort of building the past for folks that maybe it would give some comfort to into the future. But pagers is such an interesting thing because we look at it now and it really just screams the 90s. You know, I mean, it's like I had a clear green Motorola pager. You'd get little charms for them and stuff. And, you know, it went from being a thing that only doctors had that almost represented this position of prominence to this thing that everybody had. I had one when I was, you know, a teenager. And now it's back around to be, you know, went from tens of millions of people having pagers to now it's just a hospital thing again. So it's sort of gone full circle in a weird way. But I just thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about the history of pagers. I didn't realize they went back as far as 1921.
No.
Yeah, and they were used. It was early examples, not a hand, you know, little thing you clip on
were
your belt.
Were they like telegraph pagers?
It was more
did
like
they have
that.
A wire?
Yes, exactly. It was more like a wire service almost. It was essentially a way of transmit. It was a lot more like a telegraph. Exactly, Ben. It was in 1949. The original one was used something akin to what we'd know as pagers by the Detroit Police Department in 1921. But in 1949, the very first telephonic pager was used. The inventor was a guy named Al Gross, and his pagers were used in New York City's Jewish hospital. And at this point, much like the early telephones, it wasn't a consumer device. It wasn't available. It was only available to professional, you know, circles. And then, of course, into the 80s, and by the 90s, they were everywhere. And I just thought it'd be fun to briefly talk about, do you remember pager codes, Mo?
Did you have a pager, Mo?
I don't think that I did. I think I'm sure I wanted one. And if I did, well, you know, when I worked at Pizzeria Uno's, and was that a form of a pager? Because when I worked at Pizzeria Uno's, which was very high stress in Georgetown, because they had something called the 5-minute lunch. I think that's what they called it. And if you didn't get
like
it,
if it arrives or you get it free or something like that by
exactly,
in a certain time.
Exactly. And I mean, it would create like basically collisions like in the you know, among the waiters, because you were rushing to like get the personal sized pizza to the table in 5 minutes. But I think there must have been some buzzer system that told us, and maybe when I actually delivered pizza also. But I don't think I ever had one kind of, that would I just clip to my belt that I'd just wear during the day. Did either of you guys have that or?
Yeah, I did. And I know Ben said he had one as well. Yeah.
I feel like I need to preface this, guys. I had two pagers. I was not a drug dealer. I was a very straight-laced kid. I was also not a doctor.
I was going to say you're Doogie Howser or something. Yeah.
I just had helicopter parents, you know. The thing that's interesting too with the pagers is now we're not just talking about an artifact, a physical device. We're talking about a medium of communication, right?
Exactly.
And so some of these codes may be, I'm going to be quizzed along with you, Mo. Noel is our quiz master for this. We're going to see whether we can guess the meaning of some codes. And I'll try to help out the team as best that I can. But
No, that's a great setup, Ben. Just to add, it wasn't until 1958 that the FCC approved the pager for public use. And then Motorola swooped in 1959, creating a personal radio communicator. That's kind of what they called it. It wasn't even called a pager.
Oh,
they
like
did coin the term.
Watch.
They coined the term pager, Motorola company. But these early ones were like walkie-talkies. I mean, they were absolutely massive. But into the 80s and 90s, like I was saying, you know, the whole purpose of a pager is it required another thing. You know, you had to have a phone.
Right.
Well. So I've always found them to be a little clunky, but it made sense because you would page somebody from a phone with the number of the phone, and then they would call you back. That was the intent of the way it was originally set up. But if you got a little clever, you could like do an early form of texting just by using alphanumeric, things that maybe represented the way it would sound when you'd say the numbers out loud, or maybe it was meant to be flipped upside down, or a one would represent A in the alphabet, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You could, send kind of complex messages like that, at least limited by the size of the screen. So typically these were pithy kind of 3 to 5 characters. So one that I think maybe is an easy one that most people might remember is 143.
Yeah, I do. 1-1-4.
People still use this today.
It's a check mark. I'm just looking at thinking of a phone, like the direction.
No, that's good. That's a good guess.
Good.
Think more in terms of you'd have to know what the thing was, and this couldn't be interchanged with other things. Each number represents the number of letters in the word.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I love you.
I think I got it. Yeah,
boom.
I
yeah,
love you.
Very
yeah.
good. Yeah.
Max, can we get like a applause or you win kind of? Sorry, I'm going full game show, guys. All right. That one, I think, stood out, and that was a great hint, Noel. It's the number of letters. This reminds me of talking about ciphers and codes, because that's really everybody with a pager becomes a cryptographer at some point, it sounds like, right?
It's weird though. On this, I found this site like on Reddit where they're like a listicle of all of these, or some of them kind of collated. And another version of I Love You is 831, because it's 8 letters, 3 words, 1 meaning. It's a little hammy.
But how did you know who the message was coming from? I'm forgetting this. Did the pager indicate who was sending the message?
I don't think so, because that would have been almost like a caller ID thing,
right,
which by that point would have been an extra charge if it was even available, because a caller ID, it was a special box you had to get.
It's still nice to get that message to know that someone
you'd have
somewhere
your own
loves
person.
You.
I'm sorry. Well, here, yes, absolutely, Mo. And I remember now people would have their own kind of sign-offs.
Yes.
So it might be, an alphanumeric approximation of your first or last name, and it would be a known thing in your – and especially if you start thinking about the way these were used for things like drug deals mm-hmm. or more under-the-radar kind of activities, it would be like sending ciphers.
Yeah. You know? It also, you know, as someone with cartoonish social anxiety, I'm surprised that I survived the pager era, because, like, if you guys get those texts sometimes, right, where they just say, hey, call me.
Call me.
And they don't say what.
Call who. I'm going to do one more purely numerical one, okay. And I'm going to do one different style, and then I'm out. But you guys might know this maybe from hip-hop lyrics.
Sure.
I believe it is a police code. I know Mo's a big hip-hop head, and you likely are. 187.
Oh, dirty pool. It's not good.
It's bad news. The lyric in hip-hop would be 187 on a mother effing cop.
Or the Sublime song.
He says that in that one too, doesn't he?
Yeah,
exactly. But I believe isn't he referencing something in another song? Maybe not. I don't know. 187.
I just keep thinking overeating. I ate seven of what?
Like this would be a reference. Yeah, that is very, very. This would be a reference to a literal, I believe, police code. Like 5150 is a code for someone who is having a psych. Psychiatric break and needs to be committed or something. So 187 is a police scanner code for murder.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So
okay.
If you send somebody 187, that's bad news.
Or
it's
if
not
you,
good.
Again, if you get the, if you have your pager and you don't know exactly who's texting you and you get 187, that's terrifying.
It is right. Terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it could be interpreted. It could be read as like, I'm going to kill you. Right.
Oh, yes. God, oh, no, 100%.
No. Yeah. No.
If there's no other context.
No, and that kind of aggression causes hypertension. It's like, yeah, anyway, if you're on the receiving end of that, you don't want that.
Kill you
yeah.
slowly by sending you cryptic,
it's
mean-spirited messages.
It's up there with 911. And by the way—
That was a big thing,
if
right?
any of my middle school friends are listening, you guys, it was never an emergency.
Never was it, ever.
You could just send 143. Yeah.
People would just do 911, 911 at the end of this. I do think this is all coming back to me now. This is my last one. This is, think of this one in terms of like this, these are numbers that represent letters visually. So we've got 6,000 *843.
6,000 *.
Just to indicate a space.
The asterisk is just for the space.
Yeah,
so
it's for a space.
6,000 space, and what was after the asterisk?
843.
I feel like I need a little pad of paper.
Yeah, you probably
I
do.
I always like want it to be Teddy Roosevelt, because I feel like
it should be
like glasses and a mustache, like because you can't. So yeah. There's a way I think with like numbers to make a Teddy Roosevelt or something. But anyway,
oh gosh,
yeah,
oh, nice. I want to know about this.
I don't know what eight.
These are so esoteric
is
and
it like
weird.
Go?
They're barely meant to be solved.
Is
You're
it
close.
Like go something.
Think about this. The two O's in the middle represent one letter, and the final O is meant to be a different letter, but it's the same number.
I am mystified.
I'm going to give it. Okay, it would be goodbye. Goodbye.
How?
6,000. Well, you have to think about these two in terms of the blocky little digity numbers.
Yeah.
So the six looks a lot like a G, and the O's, you know, can be a O or a D. And then 843, the four is the Y, and three is a weird backwards E.
I actually find goodbye more menacing than 187.
It's like, I'll never see you again.
That means it's already done, right?
Yeah.
The hitman is on the way.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
That's how I feel when people end a text with a period.
Right. That's how I feel when people end a text really without a period.
See, we are not the same, Ben.
We are not the
you
same.
You and I, but we are in many ways.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac, Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I owned a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
That was my little blast from the past with Paige. And then again, I thought it was an interesting twist, Mo, because, you know, again, there were millions of folks. There was a massive moment for these things with consumers. And they started exclusively in hospitals, and now they're exclusively once again in hospitals. So not dead, but certainly not alive in the same way that it once was. So I think that counts.
It reminds me, by the way, a little bit of CB radios, which I wanted to do an obituary on, but it turned out that they weren't dead, that CB radios still, and I'm really bad with this, but they're if everything else goes down in the world, that CB
radios. You see them in zombie shows all the time. Someone's got one of those laying around. Zombie shows, like apocalyptic shows.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. It's a big deal if they have a CB radio because there are people that have them still and they work.
And also, the name ham radio just confused and bedeviled me for a long time.
It's not the same as CB, is it? I'm confused too.
I think they're different.
Okay.
But the one thing is that the ham radio name is misleading, especially for someone like me who is always low key starving. You know,
it's not powered by ham. Then
They don't even talk about ham most of the time. It like occasionally comes up in their conversations. Anyway,
go ham when you use a ham radio? You're just yelling at people and just being really aggressive?
This is a dumb and true story. As a Boy Scout, I got a ham radio and I figured out it wasn't like a secret network of food fans, and I put it in the attic.
Done.
I kid you not.
Collecting dust.
At this point, though, I suggest with this wonderful history of the pager, Mo, if you were to be so kind, could you give our listeners playing along at home a bit of an off-the-cuff obituary for the pager? anything you'd like to say.
Okay, we should probably start with a cold open. 143, I love you. 187, I'm going to kill you. 6,000 asterisk something, something, something. Goodbye.
That could be the whole thing. It's poetry.
I'm Mo Rocca, and this is Mobituaries. This Mobit,
there you go.
The pager, a lost language. And then we'll just have to give it a date or something, you know.
That's it.
Yeah, right.
Poetry.
Yeah.
Poetry. Wow.
Is there a form, though, that you have to adhere to? Is there like a number, a word counts? Like what is the kind of tried and true formula for a good obituary and length, you know, and all of that stuff?
Well, that all important first sentence, that's got to be like action packed. That's got to be a winner. And that is, and sometimes they're disappointing. Sometimes people punt and just sort of say, you know, for a world leader who lived many, many years. I mean, I've seen some that are real letdowns, but you got to pack it right in there. And, you know, in the Mobituaries book, in the preface I wrote about, how, you know, Bill Cosby's first line is going to be packed with a lot because of how much has happened in his life. So the first paragraph is usually two sentences. So there's that first line. So Mo Rocca, comma, who blankety blank, 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 comma, died today, period. He was 108 years old, we hope, period. But I think for the written ones, the ones I like, they have a very a detail usually about the person early in life that was significant and kind of presaged, predicted something larger. So there's a great obituary for Alfred Hitchcock, and I'm going to get the age wrong, but it has a detail that when he was like 6 or 7 in the English village he was growing up in, that the local jailer, in a kind of early version of a Scared Straight program, took him to the local jail, threw him into a cell, slammed the door behind him, and said, "That's what happens to bad little boys." And oof. That
had he done something to deserve this treatment?
No, it was just educational. No, okay. Exactly. Wow. Yeah, and that clanging sound of the door slamming behind him reverberated in his memory and imprinted itself in such a way that at least in the view of the obituary writer, this then shows up later in a lot of his work about mistaken identity and crime and punishment. And so, I mean, all I can say is for fans of Hitchcock, thank God he was traumatized as a child, you know, because we wouldn't have had these great movies. And I kind of feel the same way about like stars, like, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but I kind of do feel that way about like Sammy Davis Jr. and Judy Garland, like two of the great entertainers of the 20th century. They didn't have childhoods, and that is wrong. On the other hand, I think if they had had normal childhoods, I don't know that we would have gotten such great performances out of them.
You know, that reminds me a little bit of the Mobituary episode on Audrey Hepburn with the facts that the it's like the scars make the person in a very real way, you know, and there's something deep in, you know, I hesitate to wax philosophical, but there's an art, a craft to writing these. I got to tell you, one of my favorite ones my favorite formats is the gallows humor of the satirical or whimsical obituary. You know, like you're reading something that says, William Jefferson Clinton, comma, amateur saxophonist, comma. I love that kind of stuff. Have you run across obituaries that surprised you with humor?
It's hard for me to think of one specifically, but I know exactly what you're talking about. The British are really good with that, are really kind of, you know, are kind of racy sometimes at the obits and are much less reverential. I think also in this age of paid death notices, obituary writers are extremely sensitive about being lumped in with the paid death notices, where, you know, families put these things together and then just buy space in the paper.
That's such a good distinction.
They're super sensitive about that. And it's actually the paid death notices are frankly keeping a lot of small town papers alive, because it's a really important.
So you wouldn't consider that an obituary at all. It is and it isn't, kind of, right?
It's technically not an obituary. It's not reported. It's submitted by a family member or a loved one. But those sometimes are really funny. I've read some. I wish I could give you more specific examples, but I've read some that are very, very funny about, one written very lovingly by a son about a mother, I think in Florida, who was just really profane, but the son clearly loved her. And it really painted a picture that it's like a future Oscar winner, like winning role if somebody portrays that person.
I just think that's such an important distinction, because I think what most people think of obituaries as are those things.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Because few people get the real obituary.
Yeah, I've got one that fits exactly what we're talking about here, gentlemen, from the Fayetteville Observer. An in-depth thing. We'll just give you the beginning. This is an obituary for Renee Mandel Corin, and it goes like this. El Paso, Texas. A plus-size Jewish lady redneck died in El Paso on Saturday. Of itself, hardly news or good news if you're the type that subscribes to the notion that anybody not named you dying in El Paso, Texas is good news.
Not named you.
Yeah. In which case, have I got news for you? The bawdy, fertile, red-headed matriarch of a sprawling Jewish-Mexican redneck American family has kicked it. And this is like written by her children. And there's so much love in it, but it's almost like a Friars Club roast or something, the way it just goes.
And Ben, I have thank you for reading that. It is, people should go and find it. I have read that. It is really great.
Okay, so you like that one as well. It passes like the obituaries test.
What a great way to send off someone you love with humor that way. Well, also, because I remember reading that. It went viral, I think, and I'm pretty sure it did. And I think the reason is that it's so great is because it's written in the spirit with which the woman lived her life. If you were really just to give the facts of that woman's life, it wouldn't do her justice, or even talking about how people felt about her would still not do her justice. This family went one better, and they actually wrote it in the style in a style that reflected who she was. I mean, that's like really, that is really a tribute.
Our literature nerd stuff is coming out too, because you're talking about how the aesthetic of the form, right?
Yeah, the form reflected her.
Yeah, it's crafted in her image. Wow.
It was a roast. As you point out, it's a roast of a woman who probably loved roasts, right? Always thought that Bob Barker's, I had this image for a long time that his would have been written almost like a Plinko board from like Price is Right. Column. I always thought it would be kind of interesting if like the first column and it kind of shifted and then would like almost like the path that the coin makes during a successful Plinko.
Is that done though? Like a House of Leaves kind of approach, right? Like, is that a thing? I would love to see really mega out there weirdo creative obituaries.
I think it would be great. I'm trying to think who is a luminary now and what form their obit would take. Yeah, that would reflect who they are. I mean, I just suppose like a poet, it should be kind of written in poetry, right? Like, you know, I hope Theodore Geisel's, I hope, was in rhyme, you know, when Dr. Seuss died. I don't know. Somebody, I hope, did it that way.
Ezra Pound's was like 28 pages. It got edited down to two lines or something.
And at the end, it was incredibly anti-Semitic.
And at the end, it was super anti-Semitic. That's the line
we kept.
That's a concern.
And
the paragraph was just anti-Semitism.
So we also see like, I do want to make sure we also mention the title of the book. This is not just a podcast, folks. Mobituaries, Great Lives Worth Reliving. This is, tell us again at home, tell us the order of operations. Which came first? Was it the, so we've got the inspiration, the interest growing up, your father is regularly reading newspapers for obituaries in DC, and you have that lifelong love of history coupled with this. Do you create the book first and then the podcast? Or,
well, I'll give you a sort of the blunt sort of business kind of background on it. I had this interest in obits, and Simon and Schuster said, we'd love you to do a book and a podcast about this, but the book can't just be the podcast, which I wouldn't want to do anyway. I wouldn't want to just do a podcast and then take the transcripts and put it into a book. So they were really done in parallel. But what was interesting to me is I realized, and I think you guys can understand, will certainly understand this, is that for the audio medium, you know, it's much more satisfying to do subjects that are from the recorded era, the sound recorded era. So it's much harder. So when we did a podcast, I loved the creative challenge of doing the podcast episode about Tom Paine, but, you know, he died before there was any recorded sound. And so it required a different kind of creativity. But for the most part, doing somebody like a Sammy Davis Jr. or an Audrey Hepburn, you know, it made more sense for the podcast. And then for the book, doing ancient things like, you know, death of cities and countries and things from the ancient world were more appropriate. So that's kind of how some stuff ended up in the book and some stuff ended up on the podcast.
Okay.
Makes sense. Also, I mean, we found too that, you know, a lot of times, despite the best efforts of, you know, voice performers who do the audiobook version, things that are written to be read are often not the same as things that are written to be spoken.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And yeah, so things that were written to be read ended up in the book. Yeah.
Hold the payphone. Spoilers, folks. This is going to be a two-parter. We were so excited in a wide-ranging conversation with Mr. Mo Rocca. And Noel is just so generous with his time. We get weird with it. This guy knows a lot of stuff about a lot of things.
Well, that's the thing. We went in with like this whole format where we were going to do like all of us were going to bring like a dead thing and, you know, do it like we do with some other guests where we each kind of have our own little segment. But it ended up just organically having so much to offer the conversation that we, you know, sprinkle that in here and there. You're going to get some dead things. You're going to get some, I don't even want to tease it. It's too good. What a guy. I think we're all fans already of his work. And just to see that he's a genuinely lovely and generous guy was just a delight for all of us. So, yeah.
And with that, we can't wait for you to join us on Thursday later this week when we return Mobituaries with Mo Rocca Part 2. In the meantime, big, big thanks to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Huge thanks to our composer. We have our own composer. It's Max's brother, Alex Williams.
Yeah, he knew we were talking to Mo and said he was a big fan. And it just organically came up that I feel like there's a spiritual connection between what Alex does on Ephemeral and Mo's Mobituary. So I thought it was appropriate to shout him out in that respect. Huge thanks to Christopher Hasiotis, Eve Jeffcoats here in spirit, AJ Jacobs, Bahamas Jacobs, wherever that comes from, I want to know, never going to find out. And I love that.
And of course, let's thank again, people like, Rebecca, the raccoon, spoiler, I'm sorry. Pets are people too. Let's thank Jonathan Strickland, AKA the Quister, Gabe.
That's right, the yang to AJ's yin perhaps, or vice versa.
Noel, thanks to you. I can't wait for this to get on the air.
Same. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.